Hello and welcome to this Wednesday webcast with me, Scott Casson-Rennie himself,
Al Coates,
and our special guest tonight,
Addy Larigo.
Addy Larigo. Welcome, Addy. You're very welcome. Thank you for joining us tonight. And you know, like we said before we started recording, it's just a chat between with two old pasty white blokes, and you know, that's just how we do it. All right. So
no pressure.
I wouldn't say
no
that.
No pressure.
Oh well, no, I know, but like we are like them two old men in the balcony of the Muppets. In fact, I've got a T-shirt on it that Al bought me. And it's quite nice, actually. I like it, but I'm not worrying it. Anyway, tonight we're talking panels and all that comes with them, but a bit of a different discussion. So, but first of all, would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners, watchers, and then we'll get stuck in.
Sure. So my name is Ade, as I said earlier. I am a social worker, and I've been doing that for, I don't know, like less than 20 years, something like that. And... yeah, I can't even remember.
Less than
I
think 20 years.
Yeah. I guess 11 is still less than 20 years, right? So it's five. Well, never mind. I recently started a service which is providing panel members to adoption and fostering services. So that is me.
Excellent. What is the name of your? Because I know you've got an agency. So what is the name of your agency?
Oh, yeah, that would help, wouldn't it? Agency Connection, that's what it's called.
Excellent.
Yeah.
We'll give you marketing consultancy fees afterwards. We'll put you send an invoice for that. Don't worry. It's funny because I've been in a couple of meetings recently where this issue of diversity in panels has been raised by different people, totally sort of unconnected, really. Can you tell us how you kind of got to this place where you wanted, where you thought it was an issue that needed to be addressed? Because am I right in saying you've been on panels, you are on panels, and it was just an issue that's, yeah, you tell the story. I can talk for England, but you tell us how you got into this world.
I totally forgot to say about that when I introduced myself. And also, just one second, just to say also, I'm a mom of two, I'm married to one husband. And I'm saying hello to my family right now because they're listening as well. So Mark, Kristen and Agnes, hi.
Hello, family.
Hello, family.
And everybody else in my family who's also listening that I'm totally forgetting. But anyway, back to the point.
This isn't Radio 2, you know. Come on, sort
out. Scott will send you a signed autograph as well if you want.
Yeah, you can totally do that. So
we've got mugs, we've got T-shirts, we've got pencils. It's all good.
We got a lot of mugs.
Yeah.
Anyway. Right, sorry, Addy.
Go on.
It's all right.
Go for it.
It's okay. So how I got into this, as you said, I've been sitting on panels. I think I started in like 2016 or something like that. I joined one of the fostering agencies and I became a panel member, which was quite a difficult journey in itself, but we're not going to talk about that today. We'll save that for another day. As time went on, I was able to get onto other panels and I started to realize actually there was a bit of a common factor in some of the panels that I was sitting on, in that I didn't see many people who looked like me on the panel. There were lots of people on the panel, obviously, people from different walks of life, but I noticed there was not a lot of Black or Asian people, or people who were, I suppose, what you would refer to as ethnic minority on panels. And also, yeah, so that was it. So initially that was what I noticed. And I kind of just went along with it. And I would, I suppose sometimes issues would come up there where I would feel like I needed to raise issues around ethnicity or heritage or stuff like that. And it sort of started to feel like I was raising the same issues on some of the panels. I'm not suggesting that this is the same for every panel, because some of the panels that I've been involved with, they're quite good in terms of having a range of people from different communities being represented on them, but majority of them didn't seem to do that. So I kind of just started to feel a little bit like, gosh, you know, why is this the same? Why am I feeling a bit of a burden, I suppose? And it came to 2020, I think it was, I started to really feel like, okay, I'm going to have to, I need to do something about this. I need to kind of try and change this, but I didn't really know how to do that. I think when the situation, the circumstances around George Floyd happened, and that kind of, I just really felt, I realized there was a bit of trauma that I've been carrying, actually, in terms of sometimes raising issues that is concerning Black children. And something about George Floyd's passing kind of set me down this sort of journey. And I so the burden became quite heavy on my heart. So by beginning of last year, I was very clear that I needed to find an agency, either find an agency where the panels can be supported to connect people from my community onto getting onto panels. But of course, I couldn't find any because such agency does not exist as far as I know. So I kind of felt like it was up to me to set one up. So that's how Agency Connection was born. And so the story just went on from there. Agency Connection was birthed in May 2021. And here we are today, and I'm still trying to recruit people for panels across England, across UK. So that's it.
Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, both Al and I have sat on panels over our time. I still sit on one, actually. And it is an interesting thing when I think about the kind of diversity of the panel, because my approach to a panel is around questioning around kind of inclusion. If a child was to, you know, question their sexuality or their gender or something like that. And I guess what I struggle with is the fact that panels wouldn't be, you know, they would be, I guess we're not saying that panels look at the colour of somebody's skin when they're recruiting, but how do we kind of increase that? In the same way, you know, adoptive parents, as an example, you know, we're always trying to recruit adoptive parents of different ethnicities and colours, to kind of increase the successful chances of a child being placed within those kind of communities, if you like. So it's a real minefield, really, isn't it? Is it?
I think so. I think so. And it can get quite complicated. I think when I first started on this journey, in my mind, it was quite simple. But actually, as I've gone on further on in the journey, I've just kind of realize there's actually just quite a lot of layers to it, because it's not just about panel, as you, like you said, it's about how do we recruit families who can look after children who are from different communities. How do we do that, you know? But also, this issue doesn't only affect the children that are coming into the care system, but it's also about those families. Because, for example, I imagine that if somebody says, oh, I want to be a foster carer, or I want to adopt, you know, two children or whatever, when they come onto panel, I would imagine they'll be wanting to see that, okay, there's someone that can relate to my story on that panel. You know, you sit on panels, and you yourself have been on panels. So, you know, you like to see that there's somebody who can perhaps appreciate the story that you're telling. They read all this stuff about you, and you want to know, you want to think that somebody understands you and can kind of, you know, get your perception. Oh, I can't even speak today. Anyway,
perspective.
That's it. You know, so there is all of those issues. You know, the campaign You Can Adopt is running, you know, it's been running since, you know, for how long? And we've been trying to recruit more Black adopters so that there's more, you know, some of those Black children who are waiting the longest are able to have that, those families, so they're not waiting that long. That is another conversation for another day, you know, but that comes into the strand of the discussion that we're having as well. You know, we talk about people who come from, who have care experienced adults, you know, they have lived experiences, and yet some of them are not necessarily on panel. You know, I can probably count how many people with lived experience that I've met on panel, you know? So there's lots of people who are not necessarily represented on panel. So it's not just a case of, you know, whether you're from your, you know, Black community, Asian community, or whatever, you know, there's you know, there are people from LGBT plus community that are not necessarily on panel. Do you know what I mean? So there's a whole strand of stuff. And that's what I mean. That as I've gone on, I started the journey because I was looking at myself thinking, well, I don't see many people who look like me, but actually there's many people who don't look like many other people as well, who are not necessarily there. So, you know, so it's quite complicated.
And, And I guess as well, there must be something quite profound about, you know, if you were presenting to a panel and it was a pure white, just clearly white panel, that must be, I don't know, I don't want to use the word intimidated, but I mean, you could be intimidated by that because there's nobody that you could, you know,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not of a different color, so I don't, you know, I don't want to go there, but
yeah.
You know, it's really difficult to relate to that kind of experience. But even a social worker who goes to present to a panel must sometimes feel that they are not being represented on a panel either.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I suppose it's in any situation, really. Even as somebody who sits on panel, like I said, in some of the situations, I kind of felt like, oh gosh, I don't want to be the face of the race, raising, you know, some issues. And then you're like, am I raising the same issue? And then I start to question my head, myself, as I'm sitting in panel, raising whatever question I'm raising. Sometimes I'm thinking, are my colleagues thinking that I'm perhaps being a bit, I don't know, a bit racist, I dare say that, you know, because I keep raising the same issue. Are they feeling like perhaps I'm accusing them of something because of the type of questions that I'm asking? So you sort of feel, even though I'm a professional and I can look like really confident and everything, but there are situations where even I start to, you know, you start to doubt yourself because you find yourself in the minority and then you know. So sometimes you might not necessarily, You might want to be quiet about something that you want to say because you're like, well, I mentioned that in the last, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mentioned that in the last time. Do I want to say it again? And that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
So of course, it shouldn't be like that. So, so yeah, it can be intimidating. And I tell you this: sometimes when I've applied for a job, I've kind of looked on the website and I thought, well, let me just see the people who work there and see whether I'm going to fit in, you know. Mm. And there's been jobs where I've kind of like, I'm not sure that I'm going to fit in. I'm not sure I'm going to fit in there, you know, because you look and you're like, wow, is that thing of being in the minority again, you know? And it can be quite draining emotionally when you're faced with the same sort of issue and you feel like you're having to kind of defend your corner and it's not because anybody's being mean or anything like that. It's just that when you're in the minority, there's some things that other people just don't necessarily notice or see. So you're feeling like you're having to raise it and it can be quite tiring after a while. So that's the reason why I'm citing that example.
I high five to that because I do exactly the same thing. I'm like, oh, here I go again, banging on about, you know, because something in their perspective of a doctor's report has, you know, has caught my eye in terms of, you know, oh, I don't know, whatever it could be, because I shouldn't really talk about it because that would be very unprofessional and probably get told off for that. But there's a couple of things that have come up in terms of sexuality, gender, etc. And I'm kind of like, oh, here I go again. So I literally open up by going, right, listen, sorry, but here I go again with my inclusion, diversity, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's normally kind of something that we can kind of discuss. And if anything, I guess in some ways it's encouraged for me to bring it up because actually it saves someone else embarrassing themselves talking about something they don't know about.
I was thinking that the crux of it is that I can, you know, I can read a book, I can watch telly, I can have friends who are black or, you know, different ethnicities, but that is non-comparable to having lived experience. It's, you know, I've got a shadow of that. And I think I reflect on my experience of one of our panels was we were approved to take a sibling who was, it's a long story short, I'll cut out the middleman, but basically we went to panel to be transracial adopters. We were assessed by a white social worker and we were approved by a white panel. Now, turn the clock forwards, whatever, 12, 13, 14 years, and my life's different. You know, I live among, in, you know, I know a lot more people of, you know, of colour, and I think no one asked me the questions that even I would ask now. No one had that laser insight to go, yeah, what about this? Or have you thought about this? Or you said that, but what did you actually mean? And to me, that's just a glaring missed opportunity. And it's actually borderline negligence, is it? Can I say that?
Yeah, I'm not on a panel, you said it now.
So I can say that.
You just did, yeah.
Just did.
Yeah. Sorry, carry on. I jumped
in. No, I was going to say, does that sound fair? Does that reflect some of the your rationale behind?
Yeah, I would say so. I don't think. So there are some examples that I can give. For example, one of the things that I struggle with is when a social worker says something like, I didn't raise the... you might ask a question around, how is the foster carer supporting the young person that they're looking after to meet their, you know, their heritage, you know, to make sure that the sense of identity is being kind of, those needs have been met and that kind of thing. And sometimes you will get a response which says the young person is at the moment, they're not interested in, you know, sort of engaging with their heritage. So therefore, this foster carer isn't sort of doing anything around that. And you're like, okay, so what, that's the end of the story? I mean, so the young person is not, at the moment, they're not sort of showing that interest, so then we just leave it. Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't do anything about it. Yeah. And I kind of struggle. I really struggle with those sort of responses because I think, you know, we've got to, our responsibility, our collective responsibility is to look after all of the young people who are within the care system. So even if the young person at the moment is sort of saying, oh, I don't really want to know about my Black heritage or whatever, there are still things that we can do without it becoming this big, you know what I mean? This big thing. We can still take them to see shows that, you know, that are around Black community. We can still promote books or poetry, or, you know what I mean? There's lots of things that you can do that is not ramming down the whole, they need to sort of identify with their heritage thing, you know? Mm. And so I find that a bit of a struggle when I hear those sort of answers you know, we should just be doing that. You know, if it was a white child who is in the placement, you wouldn't sort of say, oh, well, they don't want to know about being white at the minute, so we're just not going to do anything around that. Do you know what I mean? You're just doing it. You're doing it, aren't you?
Yeah.
So why is it different than when that child is of a different heritage? That's something that I would say I have seen that a few times at panel. And so if somebody who's from the Black community isn't there, or from the community where that child's heritage is, who's asking that question? And these are some of the reasons why it's important for us to have different perspective on panel, because even if the social worker is missing and the foster carer is not doing it because the child is, they don't know how to support the child because the child is not showing that need right now, we need to be asking those questions along the way to make sure that children's needs are being met. I mean, if a child said, well, at the moment, I don't want to eat. I mean, are we going to say, oh, well, that's fine. We're not going to feed them. I mean, you know, you don't do that, do you? So why would we then not promote their heritage in whatever way that we can? So I hope that answers your question.
Well, yeah, it does. I mean, what are the barriers then, do you think, to this happening? I mean, are they historic? What are the current barriers? You know, why are we not moving forwards and seeing sort of this... seeing things improve?
Yeah, I'd like to think that things are improving. I think they are. I hope they are. It's really hard to say. I hope that they are. Because they must be improving. It's just slow. The progress is slow, and I don't know that I have the full answer. But some of the reasons I imagine is because. Take, for example, before COVID, there are parts of UK where they're mostly white majority who live in those areas. Yeah. So when the panels used to meet face-to-face, I mean, obviously some panels still meet face-to-face now, but majority of them are currently virtual and probably will remain so going forward. But when you live you're in an area where there's not that many people from Black community, Asian community, or, you know, whatever community, and you want to have panel members who, you know, somebody who is a Black female or, you know, a male Asian person, or well, how is it going to be possible for them to travel to, I don't know, whatever part of Wales, or just as an example, I don't want anybody to get upset from that, you know, just as an example, you know, or parts of Cornwall where there's not that many people who are you know, majority of people there are they're mostly white. It's not possible for them to travel every time that panel is on. So I guess some of the issue is due to geography, the geographical location. So that's one barrier. But now that the panels are meeting virtually, I would like to think that we can break down some of those barriers. So Agency Connection can certainly connect people who are interested in sitting on panels with services who need panel members from various communities, you know, and that's part of the reason that some of the things I needed to take into consideration before I set the agency up, because I was thinking, well, how am I going to be able to support those services to be able to kind of make those changes? I need to be able to get those panel members there. So the only way is going to be if they're meeting virtually, and that should make it easier. But also, I think we also mentioned about sometimes the fee can be a bit of a problem. So I was talking to some young people the other day who are, they've just, I think actually they were adoptees, but they're like quite young adults, like, you know, 19, 20 year old sort of thing. And they were sort of saying, you know, I spend 2-3 days reading some of these panel papers and things. And, you know, some of the fee that I'm kind of getting, I don't feel like is reflecting the work, the level of work that I'm doing. And it's not that, you know, people are doing this because of money, but I suppose our time does, you know, we're giving up valuable time, and people who are a college student who's giving up her college time, it needs to be rewarded in some way for that time to be appreciated, because time is valuable. Once it's gone, it's gone. You can't get it back. So it's just important for agencies to recognize that people's time is of value, and they, you know, they should kind of reward that in a reasonable way, you know? So that's just some of the issues that I found, really. There's plenty more issues, but I don't want to take up time talking about that.
It's the window in your world. Well, I mean, go for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also, I was just going to say, because, you know, having sat on some local authority panels, some voluntary agency panels, there's a little bit of a difference as well, because, I mean, some of the voluntary or charities, shall we say, some of them actually don't pay a fee. And that's, you know, that's, I understand the charities, but, you know, we should be kind of reflecting that as well. But also, some of the local authorities or regional adoption agencies, they may have 5-6 cases in a day. That's a lot of paperwork to read through. We're talking about, because it's unfair to kind of skim read a prospective adopter's report, you know, and just pick out what you want to pick out and kind of just, you know, skim it for, you know, it needs to be read in depth. And 5-6 cases, and I mean, you know, 10 years ago, 11 years ago, when I used to sit in a local authority, I think at one point it was so busy, we had 8 cases in one day. Now, 8 cases, you imagine that's like a day's reading before, but you're only getting reimbursed for the day that you're actually sitting in the panel, or that's how it feels, I should say, you know. So there is kind of a, I mean, that's not trying to put people off. That's just saying that, you know, it's very, you know, agencies really need to reflect that in the fees. Yeah,
I would expect 2 hours, at least 2 hours, to read a Form F or a PO, 2 hours minimum. Yeah. And to the point, I was on a fostering panel, and they said, in the end, they said, we're going to put you all on a speed reading course. Because literally, they just acknowledged, they said, there's so much stuff. They brought us all aside for morning. But I was recently asked to be on a panel, and I said, it was for a charity, and they said, do you want to come on? And I went, yeah, that'd be great. I said, but are you going to pay me? And they went, yeah, we can't pay you. I said, I just can't do it. You know, I've got, like you say, I've got to earn a living. I don't want to raise the specter of racism, but I mean, do you think that when we look around the care system, we see that there's lots of complex narratives around race and racism. Do you think there's those echoes of racism in the system? That is, that, I don't want to draw you on at the rocks, but it's we can't not kind of talk about it.
He just has. So.
I have, yeah.
I like that phrase, draw me under the rock. I don't think I've heard that before. is that what you just said?
It is, yeah, yeah. It's like a sailing metaphor.
A lot.
I don't really know how to answer that question, to be honest. But the fact is this. When you look at the statistics, you can see that there are statistics that tell you that Black children are waiting something like 18 months longer than their white counterparts for adoption, for example. Black children are overrepresented in the care system. So, you know, look at the figures and draw what conclusion that you wish to draw from that. I'm not going to accuse the system of a politician. I'll bear that in mind. I might come back to it in another lifetime. Excellent. But yeah. But, you know, it's, you know, the facts speak for themselves, right? Yes. Hmm. So, you know, and I don't, and this is part of what, this is part of the reason why, when going back to saying, going back to the point I made earlier that I felt trauma, I didn't realize that there was some trauma that I was carrying, even as a professional social worker. And I suppose not just as a social worker, but as a person in my own personal life, the things that I've experienced, and you kind of put them somewhere, and because you got to get on, otherwise you never get out of bed in the morning. You know, this is not to say that my life has been like really terrible or anything like that, but it's just because there's been certain things that have happened that you kind of think, well, okay, I've just got to get over that and move on. But something like George Floyd death really just drew it. It just like it was. It just drew it out of me in a way that I didn't expect, and it catapulted me into like, okay, right, that's it. I just need to try to move this conversation forward by talking about the space that I'm in, and the space I've been in the past 5 years is panels, you know. And I just felt like let me instead of just joining the masses and complaining and moaning, you know, that this is happening, let me see what I can do, albeit it's a small thing. Let me just try and have this conversation and let's see if we can kind of try to change it in some way. So I feel like we're starting to have the conversation, but the change is not going to be an overnight change. Is what, you know, it's that's just, you know, we've got to be real, really. So that's where we're at.
So are you supporting, I know you're doing a range of things, but is one of the things that you sort of trying to train panels as well in relation to the whole issue of diversity? And
I'm not sure that I was Well, I say I'm training them. What, one of the, so recently I have signed to support the RAA panels across England. And one of the tasks that I've agreed to do is to mentor new panel members, because again, what we realize is that when you're new, well, I'm going to talk about my experience. When I first joined panel, yes, you pass the interview and you go and observe, and then you kind of get, when you used to meet face-to-face, of course, you get a pile of papers and you're like, here you go, Ade, you can be on panel now. Great, lovely. And I remember my first panel just sitting there thinking, I don't know what I'm doing. What am I supposed to do with these papers? What am I looking for? How do I know what points, what notes? Like, I didn't have the training, I suppose, that I feel that I should have had, that anybody who joins panel should have. That may well be a different story for other people, because it depends on what panel you're at. But I didn't feel like I had this support. Yes, the people were lovely, great, but I needed walking through. I needed somebody to say, Ade, when you read these papers, you need to look for, you know, this and this and this and this are examples of strength. These are the kind of things that you might be concerned about, and you want to ask us questions around that. So it's that sort of thing. So that's why when I sort of agreed to take on this task with the RAAs, I suggested that it would be good to have a sort of mentoring scheme for the new panel members. But then, of course, this project is only a short-lived project. It's going to end at some point. So the services still need to have the responsibility, own the responsibility of mentoring those who are new on their panels, because that needs to be sustained going forward, because there are going to be people who join panels next year, year after that, and what have you. So if you want to say training, mentoring, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, but you know.
I like the idea of that, because I think as well, when you're new to a panel, depending on your experience and your qualification as well, sometimes you can feel a little bit intimidated to be bringing things up, you know. And I used to feel very much like, I used to feel a bit of imposter syndrome sitting in a room where there's three social workers, a medical advisor, a legal advisor, you know, I'm talking to years ago when you used to have the medical advisor and legal advisor in the room on the panel, you know, this is when it was 10, 12 people kind of thing. it's quite intimidating sitting with those people, and it can carry through as well, you know.
Yeah.
And if every other member of the panel is a social worker, as an example, you can sometimes feel a little bit intimidated, and there's a bit of a hierarchy within even the panel, even though it's not meant. Let's be honest about it. Everybody is there to do the same job, and you're all on an equal footing. But sometimes it can be a little bit intimidating. So I think that is a perfect way to make sure that somebody gets that introduction, that training, and that support to be able to say, actually, I have an issue with this, and who may not normally feel that they could bring it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Can I ask as well, because another thing that often comes up at panels is religion. And I just kind of, I don't know if this is...
Oh, right.
To what you're here
we're
to
pulling
do.
Them all out but, tonight, aren't we?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean, I was recently watching a documentary, and it was kind of.
Should I be worried about this question now?
It's an in-joke, totally inappropriate.
I'm not doing it. But so religion comes up a lot on panels, in terms of faith and beliefs and stuff like that, and how it's going to kind of affect. Children where they're placed in maybe families who have strong faith or who go to church every week or all that sort of stuff. Is that something that you've noticed as well in terms of some of the panels? Because I always feel like I have to ask the question about faith if someone has a strong faith, because I don't, if that makes sense. And I always get concerned. It's something we were asked about. What if your child wants to go to church? Because we don't go to church. You know, it's something that we were asked at our panel. And we were like, well, if they want to go to church, we'll take them to church kind of thing. It's an easy response. But is it something that you've experienced as well? Or as in within the panel sound and also in terms of your recruitment panels?
I would say I have, yes. I have heard that question being asked quite a few times. And it's not just about church, it's just, you know, is whether whatever faith the adopter or the foster carer is, I feel like, yes, the questions are asked sometimes I'm not always sure what the concern is, to be honest, because I suppose if your child, you know, if your child wants to go to, I don't know, what I'm trying to think of another example and I can't really think of one. You know, if I'm doing something and my child doesn't want to do that thing, then of course I've got to make arrangement to either make sure somebody else looks after them or I don't go to the thing. So I suppose when I hear that question, I sort of think, well, the same thing that anyone does with any other situation. So sometimes I'm questioning within myself, I wonder why they're asking that question. I don't necessarily ask them why they're asking that question, because it's obviously their question and they can ask it. But I'm sometimes just wondering, you know, what the reason is. So
that's really interesting. Yeah, can I answer that question right? Because I'm registered manager of foster agency in central London. So we've got a really diverse community that are our registered foster carers. And I think the white carers are in the minority. So that also then reflects three or four different faiths and belief systems. And that's why for us, it's really important that we get a panel that reflects that community, because they understand the issues. You know, I am not, you know, one of the things I remember, you know, this is a faith thing, but it's also a culture thing. So stuff around Muslim faith, stuff that I'm just not literate about. Whereas our panel members go, oh, well, that's normal. That means this. So I go, oh, right. And so people who can, just literally, like you said, people who just have that level of expertise that it's not, I don't have to go away and read a book. It's someone who can go, yeah, that's perfectly normal. That's perfectly appropriate. And that this is what the family will do. So that one of the things we found is that we, even within, you know, we're in central London, we still struggle to find panel members of, you know, from black or, you know, different cultures, we're just not really sure what that's about. But we have to push hard to find members.
I would love to.
I'm recovering from a bad cold, and I've just got a little bit of a cough left.
Get it up. It's that cheap wine again. Sorry,
he won't let me. He won't let me mute my microphone because it knackers up the sound for the podcast, but I am going to have to if this continues on. I'm sorry. I can feel it coming.
You can just leave the room, Scott, and come back.
That's you, Jolt.
It is, isn't it? Bye.
I'm totally joking.
I still have my earphones on. I can still hear, even though I am going to leave the room just to have a cough.
Oh my gosh, he's totally leaving the room. I was joking.
Yeah, well.
I've lost where we were. So you were saying, oh yeah, I'm really surprised to hear that in central London, that's still a challenge. That really surprises me, because I would have totally assumed that it's a no-brainer. That wouldn't be a problem. So it's obviously not
absolutely
just a locality issue, but, you know, perhaps, I don't know. I would love to know. And I suppose one of the things I realized as well is that we don't really have a lot of data around panel membership and around panel in general in England. So, there are some of the things I would love to have an answer to, but I don't have the answer because the data doesn't seem to be readily available at the moment. So again, going back to the RAAs, some of the piece of work that I'm going to be doing is kind of doing a bit of a survey with them to just try to gather some information around their panels, really, because it feels as if there's data that is missing. But, you know, if anyone's listening and knows how we can get answers to some of these questions, I would love to have a chat with them because
in some ways, it looks like it's quite a simple problem to find out, but you'd have thought, actually, there's an awful lot of, there's 150 local authorities with however they'll have a panel, and so it could be quite a lot, but you'd have thought it would be straightforward. I had another question. It was a really good one as well. So are you...
I've forgotten it.
Yeah. Is part of your job then to try and recruit panel members? Are you sort of like liaising? If people were to come to you and say, Addy, I'd love to be on a panel. I live in Staffordshire. Is that something you're facilitating or sort of pointing people in the right direction?
I am. I have basically Agency Connection is an agency, a recruitment agency in its simplest form, recruiting panel members. But I am not a sort of agency in the sense that I'm not doing checks around the people, you know, I'm not doing DBS checks and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I am, I suppose, what you call how do I explain myself? I connect.
It's like Tinder. Like Tinder for adoption age and fostering age, isn't it?
That's an app.
See? There you go. You've got an app.
Did you get an app? Like, love it. That's
it's
a good
like three
idea.
Or four words to explain it. I mean, come on. I'm taking credit for this. I'm coming to you with an invoice.
Why did I not think of that? Okay, I might do that. Okay, I'm not sure I like the idea of being called Tinder, but I'm not sure I like that. But
I think you should keep your proper name. I think
absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll stick with Agency Connector. But essentially, I am connecting people who want to be panel members with the services. So finders, some sort of finders agency, whatever you want to call it, something like that. And the reason that it's set up in that way is because if people have to go through some sort of recruitment process with my agency, they've still got to go through a recruitment process with this service where they're going to sit. It's just going to be even more off-putting for people. So they don't need all of that faff. So I do a simple check, just kind of check the motivation and have a chat with them and that kind of thing. And then I have a database, obviously. So then when the agencies come and say, Addy, we need, you know, X type of person, I look at my database and I go, yeah, okay, I've got someone or whatever. And then I connect them and then off they go, live happily ever after. And they follow the processes that the agencies have got in place.
That's how you have to have, you still have to have a DBS check and all that sort of stuff.
Absolutely.
When you go through that process beyond your kind of involvement. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. So
we're going to put your details obviously in our show notes and people will direct people to where you are and stuff. So basically anyone can get in touch with you and, you know, through whatever routes and channels. Tell us how you want people to get in touch with you. What's the best way?
So
Sell it.
Come on, this is your moment. No pressure. This is it. Right now.
Thank you. I really appreciate being on here chatting to both of you. It's been really great. But I just want to make clear, I have had people contact me and say, I love the idea of sitting on panel and they don't have a CV. you know, like, seriously, this is a serious thing. So I don't need, at the risk of putting people up, I don't need people who are time wasters. I don't need people who are just want to get out of the house. This is a very serious thing. So, you know, if you want to just get out of the house, then there's plenty of other things that you can do. Being on panel is really not the, it's just not, it's that, you know, that's not what we need, because these are vulnerable children's lives. So we need people who can read the information, assimilate it, form an opinion one way or another, or raise, you know, questions or concerns, and kind of really understand, be able to, they need to be teachable to follow the process, basically. If you find that you've got plenty of time on your hands, you've got a bit of time to give to, I don't want to say spare, because no one has spare time, but if you want to share the time that you've got, then please contact my website is www.agencyconnection.co.uk. You can also find me on Twitter. You can find me on LinkedIn and on Instagram. In fact, I'm live on Instagram right now, if it's working. So
yeah,
it's live on it.
A wall behind you, like, that nobody can see. They're like, what is she doing tonight?
What is she doing? Yeah. So yeah, that's it.
And is that exclusively for people of colour, people, you know, anyone?
I'm looking for anyone who feels that they have the skills, and when I say the skills, I don't mean you have to be qualified as a panel member. I mean, you have the, you know, things that I said before in terms of your time, and you can, you know, you can read and understand that information, and willing to kind of just support, you know, foster carers and adopters in panel. So, yeah, we're looking for people with lived experience who've been in care, you know, young people, older people, you know, people from Black Asian community, people from LGBT plus, any community where you feel that, basically all the communities that I've mentioned, and even if I've not mentioned your community, but you feel that my community is probably not represented on panel, then you probably are not represented on all panels. So please, it would be really great to just have lots of diversity, lots of voices represented on panel. That would be amazing, because we'll really be helping children in the looked after system. So yeah,
I remember my question. Say,
all right, well, I have to say, before you ask your question, hopefully you'll forget it and then we can go and have an early night. The data you must be able to pull from this as well would be interesting as well, in terms of, you know, what kind of
breakdown of people.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah. So whether it's LGBT, whether they're Asian, whether they're Black, whether they're Chinese, you know, going all the way down the line. That is going to be real, really actually well sought after data at some point in the future, once you've been doing it for a while.
So. Once we can dig it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because there was one person who came forward to do this and they weren't taken up. You know, that's the sort of stuff we need to know about, I guess. You know, it's really interesting, really interesting. Mm. Right, Al, off you go with your question.
It was something that Krish Kandaya had said in relation to the aspiration that every panel where there's a person of colour being sort of decisions are being made, whether they be adopters, foster carers, children who've been fostered, adoption, yada yada yada, that if someone of color is on the the decision has been made that on the panel there would be someone who is representing sort of that diversity in some way or shape or form. Is that something that you're sort of, is that your lofty aspiration for all panels?
That would be amazing. You know, and why shouldn't we aim for that, you know? You know, why shouldn't we, you know, just go start, you know, aim for the skies and whatever the saying is, you know what I mean? Just aim high rather than kind of sort of like, oh yeah, we'll just try to do it here kind of thing. Yes, let's just go for it. It would be amazing for us to be able to meet that target, you know. So, but yeah, Krish Kandaya, one of my favorite people. I recently met him. I recently talked to him. He's amazing. So yeah, I have heard from other people that he is that a target? Is that right for me to say he set a target? I don't know how to phrase that. Is a sort of, you know.
Well, yeah. Aspiration. I mean, I think aspiration. Yeah.
Aspiration. That's a good word. Yes, aspiration.
But you were
that
thinking
came
something
to me in
like
a dream one day.
Did you? But even you think something like the Corum BAF guidance on panels, you would say that even if that was like a note that panels should reflect the community that they're managing, dealing with. In some form.
Yeah, because I mean, it's interesting. I could talk about this all night, literally. And we've talked about panels before in the podcast, and I literally could talk about them all night there. But I did used to sit in one panel that was, it was a unitary authority in a city, very, very massive numbers in terms of different ethnicities and religions and stuff like that. But the panel was all white. And it just kind of, looking back on it now, I mean, this was a few years ago, but looking back on it now, you think, wow, like, you know, like you weren't reflecting the community. Like Al said, you know, the community that you're trying to represent or trying to, I don't know what the word is you reduce, but it's just not reflective. And I think that is a massive, big thing, huge thing. But also the fact that it's mainly white people that are appointed to these panels, because, you know, that would be my experience. Even, you know, one of the panels I sit on now, you know, we were quite diverse and inclusive in terms of colour and sexualities and all that sort of stuff. So that's fab. I have no complaints about them, but have sat on some totally not like that at all and don't realise that that's a thing. Hopefully they've moved on and hopefully you're making them move on as well, you know.
I hope so. But I'm just going to share you this quick story. When I first thought about joining panel, and I must have mentioned it to, I have to be careful how I say this because I don't want to, I don't want to identify the situation that I was in. But I was in a certain situation where, I, you know, and I thought, right, okay, I could do this because I just felt like I can be a voice to children and also to foster carers, because sometimes, you know, I feel like foster carers, you know, they have a rough time because it's not an easy job at all, as it is not easy for adopters either. You know, it's, you're taking on a big job looking after somebody, a child that you didn't give birth to, you know. But anyway, back to the point, I then mentioned it to one of my superiors at the time, and the matters of life just laughed in my face, because I suppose they just thought, what would you possibly be doing on panel? Like, what could you possibly have to say on panel? Mm. Like, they didn't say those words, but their response to me clearly told me that they didn't think that I was fit enough. They clearly didn't think I had anything of value to say or whatever, because it kind of just like, you know. And I could have just taken what they said and just thought, oh, okay, that was a stupid idea, and just parked it and just never mentioned it again. But actually, it really made me feel like, well, how dare you respond to me in that way, that I don't have anything to say on panel or whatever. If anything, it made me more determined to find a way forward and get onto panel. And it did take me a while. It probably took me about 2 years before I eventually did find a panel that would take me. But it's because when you're not around panels, it's really hard to navigate it. It's really difficult. You don't even know who to contact, or it's really difficult. It's really, really difficult. But once I got the first one, then I was amongst people who do panel work, who do that sort of work, and then it became easier. But actually, if you're not in that environment, in that space, you know, I have social workers ask me, how do you even do that? How do you get on panel? So if social workers don't know, how are people who are not even social workers, how are they going to figure it out? It's not very easy. So perhaps this is part of the reason why, you know, there's a difficulty in actually getting people from different perspective, people with different points of view onto panel, because, you know, it's quite difficult to navigate. So there you go.
Well, it's been fantastic talking to you, and I think it's a topic of conversation we could come back to again and again and again. So we'll definitely have you back on, and then I can tell my almost now famous story of the police lockdown in the panel. Have I ever told you that one, Scott?
No, go on.
No,
this lockdown.
Oh yes, you have. I think you have. Yes.
Yeah,
I
yeah. There was a have. Yeah, Mrs. Coates, my the good lady here indoors. She was in a panel, and there was a police lockdown because there was a parent going to come and kill someone. But anyway, that's another story for another day.
I just wanted to do it before we go. I just wanted to confirm that you did go live on Instagram, and you are live on Instagram. So well done, you managed it. Yeah.
You're so down with the kids.
And honestly, the difference between Zoom and Instagram in terms of colours and like the sharpness on the screen. Oh my days! Honestly, we need to consider this Instagram malarkey, Al.
Do you think? Oh well, maybe give that a whirl.
Anyway, you can you can always do Instagram, TikTok. Just do the whole thing all in one go. Brilliant.
Al does TikTok. It's an embarrassment. I ignore the videos. It's an embarrassment. And when he's older, when his children are older,
they feel the pain.
Right.
I am going to end it now because I've got to get this put together and out in the morning. But Adit, thank you so much for your time, and I really appreciate it. We really hope that this is not just isn't just something that you're having a kind of beaver away at, that it's something that's taken up and really brings a difference to the families and the community that is impacted by the work of panels. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate being on here with you guys. It's been lots of fun, and I hope we're making some difference. Thank you.
Excellent. Look after yourself.
Bye.